Oh, contest time. You ready?
Let's do it.
Win a 4-pack of tickets to the Fan Night at Cleveland State Basketball coming up on Thursday, January 15th, 7 o'clock, Wolstein Center, hosted by Ken Carman and Anthony Lima. How about that? Get tickets at csuvikings.com/tickets. That's www.csuvikings.com/tickets. Enter the word Jim, G-Y-M, Jim. By the end of this hour at 92.3thefan.com, and you can get registered to win.
He's Jeff Phelps. I'm Andy Baskin. Coming up in a little bit, James Palmer from The Athletic, his podcast Scoop City with Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel. We'll talk to him in about 17 minutes. A little bit of news, Dan, just kind of Cliff Kingsbury. What's going on there?
Yeah, according to Adam Schefter, he is leaving his offensive coordinator job with the Washington Commanders to pursue opportunities. Diana Rossini chiming in that he is expected to garner head coaching interviews as well. So Cliff Kingsbury out on his own terms of Washington.
Why would you do that, not knowing that you have something guaranteed, unless you think he's got something guaranteed?
Unless Dan Quinn said, hey, what do you think about looking for a new job?
Yeah, that's the other way. How would you play that out, Dan? Why do that? Why not just wait and hope to be requested?
I think he believes
he can fly.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
If you're one of these offensive-minded guys and you're looking at the landscape of head coaching openings, what do we got? What was it, Jeff? It's six openings, right?
Six.
There are six.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you got six openings. You know the league wants offensive-minded guys as their head coaches because that way nobody can poach their offense. You've got Kevin Stefanski. You've got Clint Kubiak. I guess you could throw Mike McCarthy in there too if you want to call him an offensive-minded guy. I think he's more of a CEO. So that's three. That's the list. So if you're a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, who's probably looking at the league and probably has his agent in his ear going, you know, if you go out there with the head coaching experience you had, we can sell that the Bidwell sold you short.
And he does something that a lot of these other guys don't do, and that is
perfectly coiffed hair.
Bring some kind of a track record in. He won 11 games 1 year. Mm-hmm. Kevin won 11 games twice.
And again, you can sell the Cardinals and the Bidwell family being run like a mom and pop shop.
Yep.
I wonder where does he now put himself on the list of available head coaches?
He's in there.
I can tell you this.
He's just in there.
He's probably top five. I mean, it's not a good cycle for head coach hires of guys who are quote unquote sexy. Though he is a handsome devil, that in the, you know, the terms of a head coach.
I don't know where to look on some of the odds for coaches, but I do know this. Newsweek has a story out, and it's odds of the next Browns head coach. He's number two on there.
Kingsbury?
Shula, Kingsbury, Kubiak, Schwartz.
Commanders fired their defensive coordinator.
I take that back. He's plus 223. Oh, I see what they did here. They just put the candidate up and didn't put it in order. That is so weird.
And just dropped in something interesting.
Yeah, according to Diana Rossini as well, they have blown up both coordinators. Joe Witt Jr., the defensive coordinator of the Commanders, has also been relieved of his duties.
So, in other words, Kingsbury is moving on.
Uh-huh.
Might be by suggestion.
It's sounding more mutual by the minute.
Well, all right, they had a bad year because you lose your number one quarterback. As they did.
I don't know. I'm looking at Newsweek here. It's got Kingsbury a 38% chance of...
For most of the year.
...probability of being the Browns' next head coach. Clint Kubiak at 35%. Chris Shula at 31. Jim Schwartz at 29.
Can I go Menegan on you for a second?
It's Newsweek. Who cares?
No.
Oh.
Clint Kubiak. Interesting. Kevin Stefanski's big mentor. Who was it? Dano?
That would be Gary Kubiak.
Yeah.
So are you bringing in another version of Kevin Stefanski?
Also, you know who Clint Kubiak worked for, right? Immediately under. That would be Kevin Stefanski.
There you go.
I don't know. Should I even be looking at some of these odds?
No.
It's a reference point. I don't think it's a bad thing at all to see what's happening in the Caymans, where people are putting their money.
Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, it's a decent reference point.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I don't know if I should trust it. I mean, I'm looking also at Robert Saleh's name there, Joe Brady. I mean, there's a... Robert, so now you look
Joe at... Joe Brady's on that list of offensive minds. We're F4.
Yeah, I'm looking at another one here.
That's on me. We'll get it fixed.
I'm looking at another site here. It's got Salah at 22%, Brady at 19, Schwartz at 18, McCarthy at 15, Matt Nagy at 11.
I'm a firm, loud no on Matt Nagy.
Is it me or does Schwartz just seem like a very... maybe I like Schwartz because it's clean, it's easy, he's had success. You know your defense is going to work hard for him, that you've got half of the puzzle solved if Schwartz wants the job. I just feel like that's the end. And it was interesting listening to the afternoon show because they were saying they couldn't believe the number of people that were saying Schwartz as soon as it happened because they just didn't expect the... the grassroots movement for Schwartz to be the head coach to be as loud as it was yesterday. To me, Schwartz just made a lot of sense. It's just, it's easy. And I'm not saying that you make the choice because it's easy, but it's clean. Half of the game is already settled because you know what he can do for you on defense. You know, maybe you bring in another coordinator that can execute what he's got. He still stays with the defense. He stayed with Tommy Rees on the offensive coordinator side.
Can I throw this out? And I know he's an up-and-coming coach, and a lot of people think highly of him.
Right.
Is Tommy Rees worth a hoot if you give him the talent that you gave him this year? I mean, the offense stunk.
They're saying that they're going to upgrade it.
Well, they're saying.
Well, you remember what you said about Saban.
Kevin Stefanski did a fine job when you gave him talent.
True.
So
I think most coaches do a fine job when they have talent, don't you?
Isn't that an amazing thing?
It is really weird how that works. You know what else I've learned? Teams that don't have talent don't have head coaches that last for a very long time.
There's a stunner.
Is that weird? Believe I just brought that up. Will is in Medina. Hi, Will.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
You were good.
Hey, listen, I think you're right. I think Schwartz is the only pick, but the reason why is not because I think he's the best choice. I think he's the only choice, seeing that the roster and the situation that it's in right now, if they don't win with the current quarterback situation next year, that means they failed, which means then you're looking at Barry possibly getting replaced and them starting the entire thing over from scratch, new GM, new head coach. So any successful coach or potential hot coach that's coming in or coordinator has to be looking at this could be one and done if they fired Barry at the end of the year and start over with the new GM.
So then is it just for Schwartz just to slide into that position, knowing that you might be bringing in another general manager a year from now? Is that the right thing for the Haslams to do? I think that's it. Like saying, hey, let's kick the tires on what we have in the house. I don't think there's a problem with that.
I think you're doing it, too, because at least then, he's got the buy-in from the defense already. So you don't have to worry about a new coach coming in and letting go of Schwartz and then having to get the defense and the offense on the same page. And then, once again, they don't have a quarterback. And if they start out next year 1-4, then you're going to hear about everybody wanting out.
That's true. And well, great point. The other part of that, too, is your owner yesterday said that he felt like the roster was good. It was good enough to win more games than they did last year.
I would have no major beef if they made Jim Schwartz the head coach. You just can't make this critical hire. This is critical right now. You can't make it out of convenience. And you can't make it because guys on the defense like him. You just can't do that.
I'm not doing it because they like him. I'm doing it because we've had success.
They've had success.
You're talking about, it's not only miles, but you're talking about team sack record. You're talking about tackles for loss. You're talking about keeping your team. You're talking about 14 points against the Bengals. I know it was the last week of the season. Your offense only gave you 6. You've had success with your defensive coordinator.
Perhaps.
Who's been a head coach before, who's taken his lumps and understood what it took to do in Detroit, probably has learned some things from there, would probably be a little bit different and make some different decisions while he's here in Cleveland if he could be the head coach. Again, I say this all under a cloud of saying, does he even want to be the head coach? He knows how the hot dogs are made. If you were Jim Schwartz, or maybe you're Jim Schwartz, you sit there and you bring in another head coach, I'll stay here as defensive coordinator, and let's, throw a little bit more money at me. We're good. Let's do it. I'll be the best soldier you've ever had. And by the way, I don't have to take the heat that the head coach has to. No one's on me for every move. And maybe I like the quarterback we currently have. Maybe I don't like the quarterback that we currently have. And where are we going with this? And maybe I want a bigger say in the draft. And maybe, there are a million things there. But to me, Schwartz makes sense. And that's why I don't think it's going to happen.
I'll still say I think Mike McCarthy makes sense.
I'm just wiping my hands of it. Schwartz, I can make a million arguments why Schwartz would be a great next head coach.
Schwartz does make sense.
It makes sense, and that's why I don't think they're going to do it.
Mike McCarthy makes sense. I know Dano's not a fan because of watching the Packers forever.
No, and what he did with the Cowboys as well.
What he did was go 12-5 three straight years.
Yeah, Kellen Moore and Dan Quinn. What happened when Kellen Moore and Dan Quinn left?
Well, good.
It went to hell in a handbasket.
Fine. For 1 year.
So do you think he could go find you Kellen Moore and Dan Quinn?
That's the idea.
Good luck.
I know.
Who are the guys?
Kingsbury needs a job.
Because when he hired Kellen Moore, the previous coach had Kellen Moore. Jason Garrett had Kellen Moore. And he said, I'm going to retain this guy because he knows what he's doing. Well, now Kellen Moore's the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. So who's your guy?
I'm just saying, don't hold it against a head coach that he has talented coordinators and assistant coaches.
I'm holding it against him when those guys leave and everything falls to squat.
All right. Well, then who the hell was working for him in Green Bay?
The league has evolved, and he hasn't evolved with it.
13 years in Green Bay.
Yeah. And he should have been. He probably should have been fired after about seven of them.
He had three losing seasons in 13 seasons in Green Bay.
He had the greatest quarterback I've ever seen.
Good. Okay. Dan, that's good.
So who's the guy on this roster who can cover
you tell
up
me.
And
I'm not the guy
the
who put it together. Ask Andrew Berry. He doesn't know either.
Okay, so I'm going to bring in a guy who's had Aaron Rodgers, who it's openly known was missing offensive.
A better option.
Who's openly known was missing offensive meetings because he was getting massages upstairs and not paying attention to them.
Jim Schwartz a better? Maybe he is. Maybe he is. If John Gruden? Maybe he is.
If your answer is Mike McCarthy,
maybe
you need
Clint
to find
Kubiak?
A different answer.
I'm just saying.
Guy's got muscle problems. Why you got to
During offensive meetings when you're trying to put a game plan together?
Wow. There's one guy out there who has a big track record of winning, and that's Mike McCarthy. And I would guess he's going to get an interview. I would think the Haslams wouldn't be doing their due diligence if they don't interview Mike McCarthy.
I think they will interview him as well. If that's your answer, oof.
I'm not saying it's the answer. What I'm saying is, there's nobody out there who has his record of success. And do you trust Andrew Berry and the Haslams and whoever else they throw in this search committee to nail the quarterback, the coordinator du jour? I mean, that's what they just fired. Kevin Stefanski was the coordinator du jour. They fired him.
No.
They're going to try and get it again?
Which is why I'm baffled that Andrew Berry's still here to begin with.
There you go. Ties it all together.
Yeah.
And if McCarthy were to come in as the head coach with his experience, I wonder if he takes like a little higher role in the organization than Andrew
Berry.
God
help you.
Oof. Boy, are you tainted.
Oof.
But he lived it.
Well, so did all of us. He did a little more up close and personal because he follows the pack.
I don't know. You asked me about like...
Andy, if you could hire a coach who would put together a Mike McCarthy record, wouldn't you do it right now? 13 years in Green Bay, 125-77.
And knowing where the things that like we could use
and
some stability.
And won a Super Bowl.
I'm not going to be against it.
Is it coming
with
Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers?
Well,
maybe.
Dan, that's the idea.
Aaron may be available next year.
Go find a guy.
You're right. All right. Go find Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Good luck.
Well,
God bless.
That's not on the coach.
That's on the general
manager who put together a roster that was good enough to win this year.
Aaron Rodgers starts right at the corner.
We're not going to answer this when we come back because we got a guest. We got James Palmer. Somewhere down the road, I'm going to ask you this. You could have any coach in the NFL in there, even if they're currently coaching a team. Who do you want? Think about that. I don't want your answer.
You didn't.
I told you we were trying to do a tease, and you didn't. You knew where I was going with that. 14 years, and you had to get your answer out there.
Yes, I did.
And there were people that wanted to wait to hear, but no. Jeff, thank you. James Palmer coming up next.
It's like watching the stubble on your face wiggle. Oh, Jeff did it again.
What do you mean wiggle? Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. The story never ends here in Cleveland, and we love getting a little national perspective on it, especially from someone in the know. He is James Palmer, The Athletic, the podcast Scoop City with Diane Rossini and Chase Daniel. And right now, he is on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. Hi, James. How are you?
I'm doing okay, guys. I'm still a little upset. I don't know about you from New Year's Eve. Like, I'm still struggling.
Buckeyes?
It was really,
yes.
Oh, yeah, I'm a Buckeye.
I still am, yes.
Buckeye grad.
I'm a Buckeye grad twice over, spent the better half of a decade there. Yeah, I'm still having a little bit of an issue, but I'm moving forward. These coaching searches have been a nice welcoming distraction from what happened last week.
James, what was your last year in Columbus? When did you graduate?
My final game as a student was the, I think we've used game of the century in college football like 70,000 times, but it was Troy Smith 1-2 Michigan at the Shoe, 06 was my last game as a student.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What memories? So many good memories. A lot of good memories, though. Let's be honest.
Years. Yeah, let's go.
Let's be honest. All right. Listen, James, we have nothing but drama here in Cleveland. We would love to have a playoff game again. And so, you know, we would like to actually host a playoff game in the stadium they currently play in before they actually move to a dome, which has never happened. There's never been a playoff game at this. Just give me your view from 10,000 feet of the Cleveland Browns.
It's fascinating. And we can go through the whole cycle, but this whole cycle is fascinating. I think Cleveland's kind of at the crux of it. When you depart and part ways with your head coach, who now is the clear-cut number one candidate on the market, is a fascinating situation to be in. I mean, guys, like when I talk to candidates over the last several weeks, guys are always very interested in talking to people like me and other people like Diana around the league of going, hey, how many openings do you think there's going to be? Who's going to be available, right? They're always asking, is Harbaugh, is this it? Or is Mike Tomlin, is this finally going to be time? Every single guy I talked to was, hey, what do you think is going to happen with Kevin Stefanski? And why were they also interested about Kevin Stefanski? Because they're looking for a job. And they know if Kevin becomes available, that's one less job that they're going to most likely have an opportunity at, because they all respect him as a coach so much. And so that's kind of the interesting landscape that Cleveland is in. Now, I will say this. I mentioned two other guys that have been in the league for, you know, 18 and 19 years in Tomlin and Harbaugh. This had a similar feel to it, just different. Those guys obviously a ton of success in where they're at. But my point is, it just kind of felt like it was time in Cleveland. Like, I want to kind of say that as part of this. It just felt like this was a point with the rookie class that you had and where you were the last 2 years and kind of how it wore on everybody in the building, I think Kevin included. It was time to make a decision. It's just a very interesting year with the pool of candidates. We can get into it and who's going to be available to make that decision. And now the guy that left your building is clearly, and most people I talk to around the league's minds, the number one candidate available right now.
James, did it surprise you that Kevin was let go and Andrew Berry wasn't?
To an extent, I agree with that. I think we go look at all the openings we have. Monty Osipor keeps his job right there in Arizona, right? And you see John Spytek, he did sign a brand new 5-year deal, so he keeps his job. But Atlanta's the only one where they parted ways with both after a 2-month, you know, long research project done by a consulting firm. I know that owners don't like to go through these things alone very often, and that's why you oftentimes hear that the general manager is helping lead the search. I think that's a comfort level, and somebody that they know and they trust, and when they're looking for the new head coach, plays a part in it as well. And this other part, and I've always heard this from head coaches around the league. Now, they all may be biased, guys, like, because obviously this is all coming from the head coaching side of things. But when you're down there coaching every single Sunday and the general manager is up maybe in the owner's box next to the owner, head coaches definitely feel like they're at a far disadvantage compared to the general manager while both of them are sitting in their respective spots on Sunday. I'm not saying anything, you know, ill will against Andrew Berry. I think very, very highly of him character-wise and as a person. So I'm not discrediting him by any sense. But there's always been that thought amongst head coaches where the GM is always in a better spot to have the owner's ear than, say, the head coach does. And so that part is just kind of just an opinion thing I wanted to get out there from head coaches. But the other part of it is owners don't like to usually go through this alone. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some shuffling maybe with Andrew or however things are lined up. I'm not saying it will happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe something did change a little bit in terms of the hierarchy.
Yeah, James, let's not forget that the Haslams went through a coaching search where they got rejected. And ended up with Mike Pettine when Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi were like apparently fighting on the airplane over stuff. And it was just like, what? How does this, you know? So I'm just wondering how the history for the Haslams is going to help them this time. I mean, Jimmy was, it was kind of funny when he said it, but we agree. He does understand what it's like to go through a coaching search now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
I don't know. I look at it and I'm just wondering where they're going to end up with this thing. And the other question then, too, becomes where does Jim Schwartz fit into this picture? Because he did an amazing job with the defense, and maybe he's ready for round two.
Yeah, that's to me, that's one of the linchpins of what happens. Now, when I mentioned this head coaching cycle, I think this is a very different year than in years past. I mean, I mentioned where Kevin stands now that he's available, and it's not like last year where we were all sitting here going, okay, Ben Johnson, if he wants a job, he's getting one, and Mike Vrabel is getting a job. We don't have that this year. You know, we don't have those guys that everybody, you know, Tom Brady was doing everything he could to lure Ben Johnson to the Raiders and ended up not doing it. Like, those type of candidates aren't really part of this pool. I think you need to be more creative. I think you need to work really hard to figure out some of these guys that are going to be available, that if maybe one of them is an up-and-coming individual. Like, I'll just throw out Davis Webb. Like, I'll just, you know, he's the quarterback coach in Denver. A lot of people around the league are very curious about him. He's completely blocked here, but he's played a big role in the development of Bo Nix. He's a former quarterback himself. I think the Giants will have some interest in him. I'm just saying that is like a name where you might have to be creative in types of candidates like that and who you're looking for. The point of this is defensive guys are very appealing in this cycle because of the success of Mike McDonald up there in Seattle. I think that's why Jesse Minter is a very successful-looking candidate in a lot of people's eyes. I bring all of this together to say the young offensive-minded guys, if you have to reach for a guy like Davis Webb, that shows you that there's not a lot of them there. So there might be more defensive guys. So how does that play into the fact of Jim Schwartz staying? And so I think that part of it is a fascinating aspect because of the candidates. What is his future? I thought he did an outstanding job, as always, it seems like, with a really, really good defensive unit. I think keeping him would obviously be very smart. But because of the candidates that are at play in the landscape of this cycle, I think that makes it more complicated.
James Palmer joining us from The Athletic. Dan and I talked in the break, and we would love for the Browns to find a guy who could become their John Harbaugh, their Mike Tomlin. You mentioned Mike McDonald. We mentioned his name when we were just chatting. Their Sean McVay, you know, the coordinator, the guy maybe a little under the radar who becomes a big-time head coach. Two things. Do you think the Browns can pull that off? Is that what they would be looking for? And you mentioned Davis Webb. Anybody else who you think fits into that category?
I mean, I mentioned Jesse Minter real quickly. I spent some time with the Chargers just this past week, and man, that building just thinks the absolute world of him. I've talked to some coaches that have worked with him in the college ranks and the pro ranks, and they're like, he is ready. He is a star in the making. And I know Jim Harbaugh doesn't want to lose him in terms of the way, the type of coach he is. But that type of candidate has the same ability that Mike McDonald does in terms of changing an entire building and changing everything that you could go out there and do. I know Chris Shule is a name that some people think. I'm kind of torn on Clint Kubiak, and these are kind of some of the more, you know, prominent names. There's just, you're going to have to be creative in a sense, I think, a little bit. And if you want to land somebody, and you mentioned just kind of how you have to sell the Browns, you have to really push that rookie class. You have to try to, you know, hide things like the salary cap situation that you got with Deshaun Watson and figure out how you're going to get somebody that is probably going to be very eager and most likely younger to withstand what they have to do early on and be that driving force of change. I don't know how many, you know, candidates are like that out there right now, and I don't know if the teams essentially do. And I think that's why you're seeing guys like Matt Nagy looking to maybe get his second opportunity. A lot of guys learn from that first opportunity what went wrong really, really well. I've had those conversations with Matt before in the past. So what route do you want to go? Do you want to go the route that you mentioned with those guys that maybe might be under the radar and you have something that you can really see as a future and as a long-term solution? Or do you think somebody is better off in their second go-around, like a Steve Spagnuolo or a Matt Nagy? The options are all over the place. There's just no slam dunks in teams' minds right now, which is why this hiring cycle, I think, is different than years past.
How comfortable can Andrew Berry be right now? I wonder if he feels like he's on the hot seat going into next season, going into this draft. Like you said, to be there and help the owner out maybe a little bit just to make sure you get through a coaching search. Like, if you're Andrew Berry, how are you feeling today?
I think you're feeling probably very similar to Joe Shane. I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities there, right? I mean, you had a really good draft class this year. You have some pieces that you've drafted well and put together, but you've also been a part of some some very highly public poor decisions, whether it's Saquon Barkley or Deshaun Watson, right? They're very similar spots that both of these guys are in, and they're both helping ownership within their searches because I think they're kind of needed in terms of helping those searches. I think he knows with all the draft picks, whether they have 10, I think, with two in the first round in this upcoming draft, that you have to hit on it again. I'm standing here in Denver right now, guys, who they've been dealing with the Russell Wilson dead money for 2 years now and find themselves as the number one seed in the AFC. How did they do that? I think, honestly, all the attention goes to Sean Payton. The person I think deserves much more attention is George Payton, their general manager, who drafted really, really well, consecutive seasons back and forth and back and forth in second-round picks like Nick Benito and guys outside of the first round because they didn't have first-round picks with the trade for Russell Wilson and then the trade for Sean Payton. And they hit on draft picks throughout the course of the draft. I think Andrew Berry needs to do that consecutively now down the road. Build off of this one. It was outstanding. And then find your quarterback is the other part that Denver was very, very good at. You get a quarterback on a rookie contract to handle some of the cap issues that they're having and that the Browns are going to have as well a little bit, and you find yourself out of it. I think the GM is equally as important, obviously, as the head coach, and we know Sean's done a great job with the Broncos, but at the same time, that roster was put together by having really good drafts in multiple years getting out of bad situations. I don't know if we have a large enough sample size from Andrew Berry to say that he's going to do that or he's maybe at the start of that, but I think this next year is absolutely massive.
James Palmer joining us, co-host of Scoop City for The Athletic. What's your gut tell you? Where is Kevin Stefanski next year? What's he doing? Is he coaching? And if so, where might it be?
You know, I think the most interesting part of this entire cycle happened yesterday, and that was Tom Brady's name actually being on the press release from the Raiders. You know, this is something that we've known in Vegas that, you know, he's a part of what's going on. Oh my God, he's wearing a headset early in the year and how active is he and all these different things. They told all of us that Tom is going to be a big part of what they're doing. And my understanding is Mark Davis is taking a little bit of a step back and Tom and John Spytek, the old college buddies, are going to be running things. Do they want to go more New England? Do they want to go, you know, to a guy like Kevin Stefanski that can help them pick that quarterback? To me, if Kevin picks a spot, and I think he has his choice, if he decides to go to a place, my gut would tell me that he'd want to go to a place where the quarterback is already established. Now, the Atlanta job is essentially, how much do you like Michael Penix? I don't know how much he likes Michael Penix, but I do know Matt Ryan understands that system that Kevin runs really, really well. It's what made Matt kind of successful, and his new flashy title that's expected to come, guys, president of football. I've never heard of that before, but it's awesome. it's really a great title. Will they pursue, you know, him? And I don't know if Kevin likes Michael Penix. I just think the quarterback position, with everything that Kevin has been through, probably in Cleveland, plays a massive part in it. And I do think he still has the option to take a year. You know, I'm not saying he will. I think he's pretty energized, from my understanding, about a new opportunity right now, as we're a couple days removed from it. But I wouldn't be surprised if he looked at the landscape and said, maybe I take a year. Maybe he calls his good buddy Mike Vrabel and you know, kind of gets his take on what Mike did for a year. I think everything's, you know, a possibility for him, but I do think he has his pick, and I think the quarterback position plays a really big part in that.
There's another thought I just had on the Browns. Like, if they wanted to go for Gruden or Flores, like, the Browns aren't scared of controversy. I mean, Deshaun Watson is the number one A example. I think the Browns will go after whoever they want, regardless of what the league thinks or if there's litigation or anything. Like, can you agree with me on that? Or can you see a pattern that the Browns are going to do what the Browns want to do?
No, I can put them in the same category as I mentioned with the Raiders. The Raiders have never cared what the rest of the league thinks and what the actual league thinks. Al never cared, and Mark's kind of lived that same way. That's why I think Brian Flores is actually a candidate down there in Vegas, and I think the Browns could have the same similar type of thinking if they want to go outside of the box. And this might be the year that you might have to do that when you look at the candidates that you're interviewing and you're looking through, going, you know what, maybe we do take a stab at John Gruden. It's one of those things to where, like, if it works, man, do you look smart, and if it looks bad, it's like, man, the Browns did it again. It's kind of like a really interesting situation when you go outside of the box if you're Cleveland.
You want to throw me a wild card for this race? Give me a wild card. Jason Garrett seems to be my wild card. I have no reason to do it other than the fact that he went to high school here. It's the only reason why.
Dad worked here forever. I mean,
Gannon's a local guy, right?
Isn't he? Yeah, that's true. Gannon's a local guy, too. Maybe there you give me another one.
I'll say this. Gannon was a guy, and just I'm not saying he'd get the Browns job, but like he was a guy that we were around the league talking to a lot of people that I know thought was safe. I mean, I know nine game losing streak's pretty brutal, but I think even if you ask Michael Bidwell, he'd tell you that Gannon's a really good coach. And I host a show with Steve Smith that we just got done taping this morning that we do ourselves, and Steve was telling me how much respect he has for Jonathan Gannon as a coach. I think he has a lot of respect around the league. He might get a DC job maybe as opposed to a head coaching gig. I think Cliff being available is very interesting with that happening just, you know, within the hour. That's been in the works for a while now. There's been a lot of butting at heads, my understanding, behind closed doors between, you know, everyone there. And you know, Cliff last year was a candidate in some people's minds, but at the same time, he was going to be very, very selective because he thought differently about his position in Washington, very differently than it did now. And he was very happy with where he was at and working with Jaden Daniels. I think he kind of changes this landscape just a little bit. He's going to get some looks. I wouldn't be surprised if New York looks at him for sure. And he's a guy, though, like if you're looking for the long-term, long haul, like the other guys in the division, Cliff hasn't really given you the thought that that's something that you can build off of. The beginning's usually great, and then something usually happens. But I do think he's a guy that everybody would be looking at as well. So, I mean, he kind of was picky-choosy last year. I'm curious if that's going to be the same case this year.
James, thank you. I have a ton of Ohio State questions for you, but maybe we'll save that for another time. How's that sound?
Whose fault do you think the pick six was on?
But didn't we see it coming? We saw it coming. If you watch any of the games, those first quarter kind of weird throws that he had, I was like, oh, I kind of felt this coming. I'm sorry, James. I hate to break it to us.
I know.
All right, we'll talk Buckeyes in the future, but otherwise we're checking out in The Athletic. And, of course, we're checking out your podcast, Scoop City, with Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel. Thank you, thank you, thank you, James.
If they want to go outside of the box, and this might be the year that you might have to do that when you look at the candidates that you're interviewing and you're looking through, going, you know what, maybe we do take a stab at John Gruden. It's one of those things to where, like, if it works, man, do you look smart, and if it looks bad, it's like, man, the Browns did it again.
James Palmer, I can't disagree with that. Like, I think he's right. Say this is the time to go out and get John Gruden. I don't know that fans would be upset about that. I think people would be
fans would eat it up.
I think they'd show up to the stadium with Chucky masks on.
Fans would eat it up.
I think so. And maybe that's not a bad thing. He's a good coach.
Who's out there, he's the one guy who would get the fan base extremely fired up.
Trying to think if there's anybody else.
Anybody who's out there now.
That's true. It's the out there part.
He's the one guy. More so than Mike McCarthy.
Yeah. Dan, how would you feel about that?
I don't want Gruden.
Okay. What if I told you?
I don't think that's
you have
the
to
answer.
Pick one of those two guys.
Oh. Oh, man.
You have to.
Yes,
you have no choice.
Gruden, if I got to pick the two, but God, I don't like either.
Dan and I, as I mentioned to James Palmer, Dan and I were talking in a couple of breaks ago. Ideally, Andy, I think ideally here, you want the Browns to hire their guy who's going to be what they were hoping Kevin Stefanski would be, which is your coach for the next decade. Your Harbaugh.
Well, you came 4 years short for a team that...
You're Tomlin, you're Sean McVay, you're Mike McDonald, who is... kicking you know what in Seattle. Ideally, that's what you want to find. The question is that guy out there now? Because now is when you're looking for a coach. And do you trust the people who are running this search to find that guy? Identify him and hire him. Ideally, I think that's what we would all like, right? You get your own guy and he becomes big time.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. He was, Kevin was what, right behind Zach Taylor in tenure for coaches.
Taylor 7 years, Kevin six.
Yeah, and I think there were only like five coaches ahead of him. Four? It was like five. He had like, let me say, Tomlin, Harbaugh, Reed, McDermott, McVay, Shanahan, if I'm reading that right. Those were the ones who had longer 10 years, and Zach Taylor, just barely. Think about that. And so 6 years might really be an eternity, Jeff. I mean, you're asking for Tomlin or Harbaugh, and they're the only guys that were around for the first decade of the century
well,
at their current job.
But that's the way That's the way head coaching works in the NFL, in the NBA, in Major League Baseball. I mean, that's the way it works. You hope to stumble into one of those guys that becomes good enough that you keep him for a long time.
There's one thing that James Palmer said that has me a little concerned. And it was the point, Dan, he said, didn't he say that, you know, maybe one of the reasons Barry is around is because owners don't like going through the process of hiring a head coach alone. Is that, am I saying that right?
Yep.
Basically.
Is that scary?
Yep.
Isn't that scary?
I would hope, keyword hope, that the Haslams didn't retain Andrew Barry because they wanted him to hire the new head coach and he's not on stable ground. You know, I disagree with the thought of keeping Andrew if you weren't keeping Kevin. And again, as I've said, I would have kept them both. But if you only kept him around to help you hire a coach, that's not, and though James might be right about that, I don't think that's good.
Or to get you through to the draft?
Well, exactly. I mean, you often see afterwards GMs, you know, I shouldn't say often see. It's happened before where a GM does a draft and then he's out. I don't think that's going to happen here. But again, reports out there that the Browns have chatted with a couple of former GMs and, you know, picking their brains a little bit.
Jeff is in North Carolina. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm not happy. I think we're going to look back on yesterday, 2-3 years from now, and with a lot of regret. We seem to be the only NFL franchise that doesn't like Coach Stefanski. Seems all over 31 want to get him in the building as soon as possible. I just think it's another bad decision by really poor ownership, you know. And we always seem to take the wrong quarterback and fire the right coach. And I don't know. I don't know who can lead it. I don't know where we're going from here, but I just don't agree with the move.
Fair enough. Thanks for letting your opinion out there. We appreciate it, Jeff. I think there's a lot of people that feel him the same way. There are a lot of people that would have liked to have seen Kevin Stefanski say. I think there are more people that were kind of in limbo. They were like, you know what? If he stays, it'll be okay. If they let him go, let's see what they can do. Let's see if they can upgrade. I think the majority of Browns fans are in that world. Do you think I'm wrong? They could have kept him. They might have been upset for 24 hours. And then they're like, all right, let's see what Kevin can do again. But then you're walking into next year with a coach on the hot seat. And that's the last thing I want to see. So in a lot of ways, I'm happy for Kevin. He gets to move on. Obviously, like what he said, I think is true. There are a lot of other teams out there that would be interested in. We're going to find out real quick how many teams are truly interested. He said, is there an interview he's got over the weekend? Didn't I just hear
supposedly Tennessee on Saturday.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's one.
Let's be fair, though. In all honesty, there's only one reason that you would have retained Kevin.
Because you thought the team was going in the right direction.
I don't think that's it.
Why would you have kept him?
Because you thought he was a good coach who could coach a good roster, and you saddled him with some really unnecessary stuff with quarterback situations. It's bigger than Deshaun even.
Yeah.
And that's why you would have kept him. And let him get through this whole thing and let him see what he can do. Because it appears that's one reason you kept Andrew Barry. You know, Kevin won 11 games in his first year, correct?
Yeah.
Who mainly built that roster? John Dorsey.
Dorsey, yeah.
Right. So there was pretty good talent on that roster. And Kevin coached it up. Then he had another 11-win season. I'd say that was probably Andrew Barry's roster. That worked out okay. Although some of the key guys were here, you know, long before. In the last couple of years, the roster, I think, has been not good, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and you kept one and not the other, which makes no sense to me.
I'm just trying, give me a little history here, will you? Because I don't know that I was in deep on this. When the Browns and Marty separated,
yeah,
I mean, we had a good coach who didn't want to hire a coordinator, right? And they ended up going to Bud Carson.
If my recollection and the way that I saw it go down is accurate, the main reason was because, at least a big part of the reason, is that Marty wanted his brother involved,
yeah,
Kurt.
Yeah.
And Art did not. And so I'm already booked.
Hmm. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of points in Browns history where we, you know.
You want to go Jim Schwartz here?
Sure.
You had an offensive-minded head coach who had had some success. You decided to get rid of him, Sam Ratigliano.
Right.
You promoted his defensive coordinator to replace him. Is that similar to what we're looking at right now, other than age?
Yeah, are we back at that point in history?
Sam was a little older, and Marty was younger, and now you're getting rid of the younger head coach. Perhaps you promote your older defensive coordinator. But that's, you know, that we've seen this before where a head coach gets fired, and the Browns have moved up a defensive coordinator. It's just so long ago, you know, with Marty.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to give Browns fans that have been around, the Browns fans that have the good resume, just trying to give them
That was 40 years.
I know. I'm still trying to give them a little piece of what they would say because they, when they call and they say, hey, I've been a Browns fan for 40 years.
And we say?
And this is what we're about. Good resume.
Inspired by?
Andrew Siciliano.
That's correct.
That is correct. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Still in the aftermath of what happened for the Browns as they decide to fire Kevin Stefanski. We all try to move forward here and figure this thing out. Let's do a little NFL rapid fire. There are other things going on across the league, and we're going to get to that next. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.